This episode is not your usual property podcast. It's part true crime, part cautionary tale, and 100% real. We're telling the story of how our builder was nearly killed by a tradesman that we fired, what we learned from it, and what it means for anyone managing projects in the property world. And no, we did not make this up. It's all on CCTV, the police were involved, and our builder, David, is here to tell the story. Hey, I'm Russell Leeds.
And I'm Anna Leeds.
And welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. So this week, we are joined by the builder in question, your brother.
Yes.
My brother-in-law, Dave. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Well, we never thought we'd be filming this. I mean, not many people can say their brothers nearly got murdered on a... This is a bit of an unusual, and it's... We kind of can semi-laugh about it now, but it really isn't very funny.
Do you know what though? Like, I probably, because it was 10 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it's, you could be a little bit more light-hearted about it, but literally...
I suppose when I see you two most days or three times a week, you see me better every day and you actually forget then
how bad it was.
It's an unbelievably shocking story. So let's just set the context. So you are a builder, you work for our company. You manage all our sites when we buy new projects. You'll go in, even if we've got like a mains contract like we did with this site, you're there as well, kind of doing jobs and overseeing and making sure it all flows. So we know that if you're there, everything's going to go right, everything's going to go to plan. You also work with a lot of our academy members. When they're looking at jobs, you'll help them quote them up in the early stages. Not do the work, but just help them get an
give
idea.
Give them a quote, a rough estimate of what they need.
Exactly that. Which is great. So you're at our site, one of our sites over in Willingham. We're doing a big refurb there, one of our hotels. And there's a guy who we didn't even hire this guy, did we?
No. So unbelievably, the person that run me over was actually the painter's labourer. So it wasn't actually anybody that we'd actually employed to pay.
It's literally just a labourer on site. And... The painter that we'd got in wasn't doing a particularly good job.
So he wasn't doing... Yeah, his work wasn't up to the standard that we were sort of after. There was some money that he'd given the price that he'd come to us sort of a couple of weeks before. I'd noticed his work was bad and he'd sort of said, I've messed up a bit on the price and I haven't got enough money in the job to finish it.
Yeah.
So me and another person that I sort of work alongside sort of... had a meeting together and we sort of come to the conclusion it's probably best if we get rid of this painting contractor and we've complete the job with another contractor. So basically we got him into a meeting. We sort of expressed their concerns with his work, sort of money wasn't left in to complete the job. So we all come to the best conclusion that it was best for him to leave, sort of pack your tools up, finish off what you've been doing this morning, don't bother coming back. And as far as I was concerned, that was the end of it.
And he showed no problem.
He was absolutely took it fine. He agreed what we'd said and he thought it was best for him to move on as well. And I think he took the project on and it was too big for him.
Too big for him. And this is relatively normal. Right, it's just the sort of thing that happens.
But then his labourer, should we call him Mr. For legal reasons, we can't say his name, but we'll call him Mr. S.
So
Mr. S suddenly arrived back on site.
So Mr. S, about 4 weeks later, I took another painter on, obviously. I think they'd come back to pick a couple of tools up that they'd forgotten the job. He suddenly realised, actually, he's took somebody else on that we know, and I think he took that to heart, and I think that upset him.
Okay.
So they basically came into the building... started shouting, I'm going to punch your head in, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I was like, whoa, hold on a minute. Like, I thought this was put to bed sort of 4 weeks before when we had the meeting in the office. And you took it fine. Let's just leave it on these terms that we'd left it on. All of a sudden, his top was took off, chest stuck out. I want to fight you, I want to do this. But obviously, there was two of them. Luckily for me, I still had builders on site and they sort of come down and was like, Dave, you all right? And I was like, well, no, not really. I said, I've sort of got rid of the painters and they've turned back up today and they want to fight me. Managed, fortunately, we sort of talked the situation down between me and a couple of other builders on site and I managed to get them to leave. They sort of threw all the rubbish out the back of the van on the site, which also upset me a bit. I sort of said, like, what are you doing? Like, pick your rubbish up. I'm not having that. sort of leave the site now and you're not welcome back.
Yeah.
The company then served a letter to say that the decorating company is not allowed on site, and if you are on site, you'll be done for trespassing, or the according whatever we need to do will sort of be dealt with.
A legal letter just warning them not to come back.
Yeah. And then,
and as far as I thought, I sacked them 4 weeks ago.
A project now
today to fight me.
Yeah,
we served them a letter. It's got to be finished. Like, yeah. I'm never going to see this decorating contractor again.
Yeah.
And you didn't. And the project went well. Yeah. We finished it off, renting out the rooms.
Exactly.
Everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Until.
So, the next part of the problem arose. So, I had a problem with my van. I received a text message to say, so-and-so company's going to fix your van. Can you take it down to Newmarket? So, I thought, sound. Got in my van, put it in the sat-nav.
Which, just to say, this is about 40 minutes from where...
The site is where I'm working. And then the site is actually another 2 hours from my home.
It's not like it's down the road. And it's like... So the chances of this happening...
As if the person followed me.
Yeah.
So basically, I looked in the sat-nav. I think I had 3 or 4 minutes left to my destination. Sat-nav told me to turn left. I turned left. Got it to the top of the street. And out of all the people that you could ever imagine being in that street, it was the painter that I'd sacked. So he sort of spat at me through my window, which upset me, obviously. Yeah. I sort of turned the van round. I wanted to know why he'd spat at me and why he's still taking me sacking him to heart.
Yeah, why is he still so angry?
Like, I thought it was done and finished. So I sort of overtook him, pulled up. He pulled up as well, which I thought, he's going to get sorted out now. So I got out of my van, started walking up to his van. The next thing I knew, I heard tyre screeching and I was, in the middle of the road, left for dead. So I think I'd broken my wrist. I've had to have plates, compression screws put in my wrist to put that back together. My fingers were all broke. He sort of broke my shoulder and ripped the ligament out of my left-hand side shoulder socket. So I've had to have holes drilled and pins put in to hold the socket in place. The tendon sewed back together. Stitches in the top of my head. I'd sort of sprained all the ligaments in my
foot. You had cuts all over your face as well, didn't you?
Facial injuries, nose. Yeah, it's been a really hard time.
What did you... When you first got hit, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming you're in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Like, probably most people have never been through something like that before. Like, what was going through your head in that moment?
So the first thing that went through my head was, I can't believe I've been run over.
Yeah.
I can't believe that this has actually come to this stage.
Yeah.
And then I literally turned over and I could feel warm in my ear. So I put my finger in my ear and I actually got blood all over. So my natural instinct was then is, oh my God, I'm dying.
Yeah.
Like when you've got blood sort of coming out your ear, everybody knows that that's a brain injury and it's not good. So I did naturally think, I'm dying, like my life's over. Fortunately, it happened outside St John's Ambulance Training Centre and it was all caught on video. And luckily, the right people that situation was able to come and help aid me while the ambulance sort of came.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I remember getting the call and they were like, David's been injured. And I remember thinking, what do you mean? Like,
he fell off a ladder or he's done something on site.
So then I was like, I'll call him. Like, oh my God. And the police answered. And I was like, well, what's happened? What's he done? And they were like, he's got run over. And then I started thinking, well, what was he doing? Like, dilly-dallying around, like, in the middle of the road on his phone. Like, not many adults go out and get themselves run over, do they? Kids do.
Yeah.
But, I was thinking, well, what do you mean he got himself run over? And they were like, no, someone deliberately ran him over. And I was just like...
That changes everything then. I mean,
we were like, how is he? And you know that they always downplay it, don't they?
Yeah.
They were like, he's in a really bad way.
Yeah. And that's
thought, that is... Not good worrying coming from them.
Yeah.
And I remember then the police officer was lovely, to be fair, because he said, stay on the phone and I'm going to tell you what hospital they're taking him to. And to be honest, if he hadn't told me that, I don't know if we would have found you.
Yeah.
Because, like, we couldn't get through to you because of how you were. And, like, loads of people were looking for you and couldn't find you because you went to, like, some random hospital, didn't you?
Well, I ended up in Bury St Edmunds, out of all places for me to sort of end up.
Luckily, the police officer was kind and told me where you were. But it was 3 hours, and I bought your partner as well, didn't I? And that was such a long And I was thinking, no, he's going to message to say he's okay. And you didn't. And you didn't. And I remember driving thinking, I can't let myself get in a state because I've got to drive. And I was like, has he messaged yet?
No.
And then I was like, this isn't good. Yeah. Like, I was like, otherwise he'd at least ping you to go, oh, I'm okay. Okay. Yeah. Like, and I was like, and I remember arriving thinking, oh, I just don't know what we're going to find here. And the minute we pulled up and we went in and I think we were looking a bit flustered, they were like, who are you here for? And I was like, David Mills. And they all knew the reception. They were like, this way, he's in recess. And I was just like,
oh, this isn't good.
Like, and I remember just walking in thinking, oh my goodness. Like, and I was so relieved when I saw you, because even though you were in a bad way, at least you were, because no one had really said, they'd kind of gone, yeah, he's still breathing. It was kind of a bit like,
still breathing, but how is he?
Yeah, like, yeah. How bad, like, and actually, you've had some horrific injuries, but you could have been killed, yeah. Like,
well,
actually.
I was actually dead. I was in the road, and I generally thought I was dead.
Yeah, to actually be able to now, 10 weeks on, be able to sit and tell your story is actually quite incredible.
Yeah, because, well, there's been parts along those 10 weeks where I've really struggled, and I thought, well, this isn't good luck.
Yeah.
I'm struggling there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that your one shoulder had gone, so this arm you couldn't use at all.
No. Yeah.
And then the other one, you broke
my
arm,
wrist,
broke
my wrist, hand.
In it. So you had no arms.
Nothing. No. I couldn't do anything.
And you couldn't
And the
walk.
Most worrying thing was as well, is that the hospital had adamantly told me, unless you've got 24-hour care, we're not prepared to release you.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh no, my partner's going to have to stop work.
Yeah.
The knock-on effect this is going to
cause. And she's self-employed.
Family.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's not like, oh, she can take time off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
so
then also, being my partner, a natural thing was, is I've got to stay at home and I've got to help Dave.
Yeah.
But also I'm mindful that there's no income then coming sort of into the house.
Yeah.
So I've got my daughter, I've got my son, I've got everybody trying to sort of,
mom and dad
even
came
down.
To
the little things scratching my head, just opening to eating.
Yeah.
I mean, we all went out for a meal, didn't we? And I sort of had to say to Russ, can you cook my meat? Can you sort of feed me, please?
Yeah.
We were like the worst at forgetting, weren't we?
Are you ready, Dave?
Yeah.
Like,
I feel like we did the worst things, though, to him, like, as in forgetting. And we'd go, like, hey, do you want to do. Oh,
well, little things like Russell doing the aeroplane noise, you know, that just cheered me on and gave me the sort of, yeah, I'm going to get through this.
And even yesterday when our daughter had a pool party and I was like, bro, you're going to get in? And you were like,
I might be able to do circles, but I don't think I can swing straight.
Do you know what I thought was funny as well? This wasn't even that long ago. This was about 2 weeks ago because you've only just had your slings off.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you've only just been able to use your arms again. And I was teaching my younger daughter how to do her 9x table.
Oh,
and
this
you were
is
like,
funny.
Oh, if you don't know, it's the tip where you hold your hands up, you put down the correct finger. So if it's 9x5, put down your fifth finger, and then you can see 4 over there, 5 over there.
And we were all doing it like this.
Yeah.
And you were like, I've never done that before.
Russell's
like, you could do
that. My hands.
I was like, easy. I said, put your hand out. And you were like, eat.
Come on,
mate.
So we've definitely had some funny stories, and you've got some funny stories
but
to tell.
Because like, I've always been able to use my hands, it's just natural for people to say, oh, give me your hands.
What is the worst thing, having no arms?
Yeah.
Obviously, I've never personally experienced that. What's the worst thing that you're not able to do yourself, having no arms?
Everything, really.
But if you had one
main thing would be,
because I've got one that comes into my mind.
Yeah, well, I've got one that comes into
getting
my
getting myself dressed.
Right, that's not the one.
I don't think toilet.
that's probably the most demoralising thing.
Degrading.
Yeah.
And like you say, we're all chuckling about it now, but it actually, the reality of living with that isn't funny at all, is it?
No.
We kind of, you are so good, because I remember saying to people at the time, even when you were in your worst pain and stuff, you were still telling funny stories going, oh, this happened to me in the hospital. And,
I think that's a way I've coped with getting sort of through the pain.
Like when you were saying about you were walking towards the bathroom at Willingham, so Steph just whipped your trousers down, assuming you wanted the toilet.
Wanted the toilet, and actually, I didn't. But naturally, every time I walk through the toilet door, everybody just automatically goes, Dave needs the toilet.
Let's whip his trousers down. And I think
everyone.
No, yeah, not everyone. But
you weren't so forthcoming, Russ.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't. So, I suppose we know what's kind of happened to you.
Yeah.
What about Mr. S? Like, what's happened to him?
My understanding is with Mr. S, he's been given some conditions. He's been granted bail. he's not to contact me. I think there's another couple of things that I can't really disclose until the court case is sort of complete. The same with the video. Quite a few people have asked me.
It was all caught on CCTV.
It was all caught on CCTV, yes. So the police officer dealing with the case came to my bedside and actually said, we've got it on three different cameras on the main road that it happened at, and it is clear that it was with intent to sort of kill you, really. Yeah. So.
Well, I don't think you speed up and plough someone down with any other intent, really, do you? You've got to be prepared.
Intent
to
on
seriously
killing someone.
Or killing
what's
them,
he being charged with?
So he's got the main biggest charge. So there's two different ones. They do Section 18, and then they do a Section 18 with intent to kill. So he's actually been done for the Section 18 with intent, using his vehicle as a weapon. Leaving the scene of an accident. Yeah. And then there's a couple of more charges in there. So.
And I can't remember if he said, but he did actually ring up, didn't he?
So,
about an hour later,
he actually phoned the police and said that I've run someone over. But obviously, an hour later, I could have been dead. So, actually, leaving it
and
that
And he thought he had killed you, didn't he?
Yeah. If I was in, like, a lane and not a built-up area, I think it could have been a lot worse because it could have gone that full hour and I could have died.
Yeah. Yes.
So, actually, that it happened in a built-up area and there was witnesses there and it was video recorded has helped the case massively in that sort of way that I was in a built-up area and I wasn't left for dead and there was enough people to come and sort
and
of
an ambulance
reassure me.
Exactly.
That's so, you know, it's not...
I think that was the saviour.
Yeah, crikey, that people were there to help you because I dread to think...
And then not knowing where I was either.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a place that I've never been before and all of a sudden I'm... being took a 20-minute drive to a hospital that I don't know.
So horrible, isn't it? Yeah.
Really, really, really rough.
Sorry to interrupt myself, but if you've ever wondered how some investors can earn up to £1 million a year and pay zero tax, totally legally, I'm running a completely free one-hour webinar where I'll be teaching exactly that. The link will be in the description. All right, back to me talking again. Of course, this is a really extreme thing that happened. This is not normal. It's not like, oh yeah, every time I fire a builder they try and kill me. You know, it's not a normal thing. However, what is more normal is I'd say maybe threatening behavior or damage to property from builders that are disgruntled. So
certainly threats to
or turning up in the night and smashing your windows or doing your tires on your car.
Yeah.
Just the general stuff that you do to people's property rather than the actual person.
So this is massively extreme, but much milder versions of this happen on, I wouldn't say a regular basis, but I know lots of people that do biorefurbished finance projects,
that have had issues
have had
with
this
builders.
Kind of issues. So I suppose the first question is, we're going to look at, in a moment, what people can do to stop this from happening, especially from your point of view as a builder. But before we do, were there any red flags from this firm or any area that we maybe messed up in hiring this firm?
So the problem is with hiring a company is you don't actually know what workers are going to turn up. So it's all right getting a painting company in and meeting the director, the manager, you giving him the list of works, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But then actually, is it going to be the manager that you've talked to and that you've got the agreement with that's going to be doing the job?
Yeah.
Or is it actually going to be any Tom, Dick and Harry off an estate that says I can paint?
Yeah, that he can
you
just
scrape
in.
You don't actually know that person's competent until they've done sort of a couple of days. So you're sort of always stuck as in, well, do I just not want him on the job because I don't know him, I've never seen him, or do I give him the chance and see the quality of work and then make a decision whether you want to keep him on the site? So, yeah, really, there wasn't any red flags at all when I spoke to the main contractor. But then obviously when the labourers turn up and the different painters, until you've actually done a few days working with them, you don't know.
Did Mr. S ever cause any problems on site before he did?
So there's always banter on site. There's always...
But he did nothing...
But nothing where I thought, this is not going to be end well.
Yeah.
It was just always sort of controlled. People have a laugh, you take it on the chin.
Yeah.
And you carry on with your work. And I work like that. If people are going to work, they give me a good job, they get paid, and there's never a problem.
Yeah.
So for this problem to arise and for me to nearly get killed was not heard about from sort of my... It's new
to me.
You've
experienced.
Yeah.
So is it normal then, if you're hiring, again, I know this is quite a big project and probably people won't be doing converting 26 bedroom hotels, right? But let's say people listening to this are doing either buying an individual house and refurbing it, or maybe buying something and converting it into a couple of flats, or that type level of project. So you're not going to have a big site entrance, you're not going to have people checking in with their fingerprints, all that jazz. Is it normal for you to hire a builder for those type projects and then that builder not to show up and to have other people come on site that you don't know who they are?
So with big contracts like the 28 bedroom hotel that we're doing at the moment, I would say the main contractor will always use subcontractors.
Yeah.
So you never get to meet those subcontractors until they turn up on a site on a Monday. Whereas if you're doing a domestic property, you sort of expect the builder that you've took on to have his own workers. Okay. So the builder employs his own electrician on the books, plumbers, painters, plasterers, carpet fitters, kitchen fitters.
And that's what you, that's how you used
and
to work,
and that's how I've
it?
Always worked, yeah.
You were part of a team and you were their plasterer and you would all go on a house job and you went as
we
the
all
plasterer.
Worked as a team.
Yeah.
And the job got finished as a team.
Yeah.
Rather than people coming into that job that we didn't know, we was always working with the same group of people to complete that job
how
together.
How do you know, though, that's... How do you know you're taking on that and not someone... How would you find...
Because from my perspective, let's say I hire... Who was it you used to work for back in the day?
So I used to work for a company called KMP Properties.
KMP, right. So let's say I get KMP to come give me a quote.
Yeah.
The guy turns up who is the main guy.
Kev,
right. So Kev turns up. I speak to Kev. Kev is like, yeah, I can do it. Kev turns up at site with you and a load of the other team.
Yeah.
How do I know that you work for Kev all the time and you're not just a subby that he's just found on...
It's a hard one, that is, really.
Because you think if you asked, they'd all pretend.
That's my team.
Yeah, that's my team.
You need to really be asking is, are they on the books?
Okay.
Are they paid through the company for yourself?
Ah, so you are actually on the books for that?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Ah, so are you... Okay,
so if you're actually paid through that company, you've got more rights in wanting to do the good job. Because that company will always tarnish your name.
Yeah.
So really, if you've got a company that's got workers that are paid direct to that company, I always think that you're going to get a better job rather than a main contractor taking the job on and then getting subcontractors to complete the work and then them taking their cut at the end.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
So yeah.
So you want someone really who's got their own team.
So when you get somebody into price, you want to be asking them, do you use subcontractors? Or is it your own team that you've sort of worked for the last 10 years together? Because on a domestic, I would recommend getting a team in that has always worked together and they've always produced good work at the end of the job and references.
I know it's a completely different field, but obviously we ran an entertainment agency and we had both. So we had our people that were regular team members kind of on the books and we had about 35... entertainers
for like jobs
that
are miles away that you can.
They did all our jobs, right?
Yeah.
But let's say we went over capacity.
Yeah.
Then we had subbies,
yes,
subcontractors.
But did their own work.
And we had about 10, I would say.
Yeah.
That had their own companies, did their own thing. But if we were struggling, if we were like, let's say we had someone off sick, or let's say we just took an extra booking when we had a really busy weekend or whatever it was, we would then reach out to them and try and get those.
Yeah.
However, from our sort of perspective, I mean, the first thing, because we cared about our brand and our company and our reputation, we would only want to send someone that we knew was going to... I'd rather not take the book in
than send somebody that's going to
do a bad job.
Reputation.
So we would get everyone DBS checked, for example, or CRB. We used to be, but the DBS checked everyone. So we knew that there was no... They'd had no history of... So we don't want this sort of stuff happening, right?
Yeah,
imagine the client refused to pay them and then they threaten the client.
Yeah,
it would just be awful, do you
know
what I mean? So we want to deal with everything professionally on the day. So we would really care about that. I suppose it didn't matter whether it was a subby or whether it was someone that was worked for us in-house.
Because
we still did the same checks.
Yeah.
Do builders do that in the
same
way?
So the hard thing with doing DBS on sort of builders... is, as you know, if you've been a carpenter for sort of 25 years and that's all you've ever known, and you've always worked for a company and you've always done good jobs and you've always had recommendations for your work. Sort of saying to a 50-year-old bloke, can I have a DBS check?
Yeah.
Sort of might actually make him think then, well, hold on a minute, do I actually want to be doing a job for somebody that's already questioning my capability?
Especially when you're a criminal.
Think growing up with having you as a brother in the builder's trade, I feel like that's not the dumb thing in terms of, I reckon...
I'm not talking about the client, though. I'm not talking about the workers. The client. I'm talking about the builder...
That's actually on sod.
Getting their...
No, I'm not saying that's... I think that would be a great idea, but I'm just saying I don't think as a... Like, that's their culture to do that.
If Kev had turned around to you and said, look, Dave, I want to work with you long term, but anyone that I get on site, I want to make sure that they haven't got a criminal past. Is it all right if I do a DBS? Would you have been like, F you? Or would you have been like, fair?
Yeah, I would have probably let him do it. But then what you've got, another thing that you've got to think of with builders, we're all rough and ready. So on a Friday night when you're in the pub and you're having a laugh and it all ends in a fight.
Is what you're trying to say?
Even though it's not a fight that's ended up nasty, but that'll always be on your DBS check.
Is what you're trying to say, if all the builders were DBS checked, we'd have no builders to actually use?
Yeah, exactly. They'd all come up as violent.
So maybe this is the new business model, right? We set up a building firm
and we get all our builders DBS checked.
And then literally though, imagine if you had a quote and you said to you, look, I understand that we are a bit more expensive, but the reason is all our builders are DBS checked, which means you're going to avoid, and you gave some examples of some of the stuff that can happen, smashed windows, attempted murder, whatever it is. But all our builders are, you'd pay a bit more, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah, definitely.
No, you would, because like you say, without that, so obviously with Mr. S, I'm sure he's going to end up behind bars for a while. But eventually, I mean, he's not that old. He'll be back out in how many years, even if it's 15 years working again. But without a DBS, he's just going to walk on another site.
Yeah.
And it's the same nutter.
Nutter that's done it. But what's going to stop someone?
Nothing.
Just going, oh, here he is.
And that's the bad thing with the building trade, is that actually anybody can turn up and tell you that they're a plumber or they're a painter. And until, like I said earlier, you find out that they're not, or they have got mental health problems, you're pretty stuck. Whereas doing a DBS check, it would show mental health, violence.
To be an electrician, you've got to be qualified, haven't you?
Yeah. But then to be an electrician's labourer, you haven't.
No, you can just...
So, although the electrician's DBS checked, if you're not DBS checking the labourers that are working under him, you could have somebody with serious mental health.
Yeah. But do you see it less with electricians, is my question, because they do have to have a certain level of qualification? No, you can't just go, really? Oh, I'm an electrician. Yeah. You get less issues with electricians than you do with...
So, the trades that really have to show the qualifications, plumbers, electricians...
Yeah. A slightly more
level-headed than, like, scaffolders and...
Yeah. Yeah. And we've been lucky that we've never... Because we're now talking about property investing, aren't we, and projects that aren't personal houses. But to bring builders into your own personal house around your kids, like, do you know when you're having a big renovation? We've been spoiled because we've always been able to use you. But that actually, I wouldn't like that, especially after this incident. Like, bringing any old body into my actual house with my children that could then turn...
Yeah.
Well, I've made a little list of some key my suggestions, and then what we can do is we can discuss them, and you can give your opinions for people who are hiring a builder, whether it be your own home, whether it be for a buy, refurbish, finance project, or whatever, to try and avoid this sort of thing or getting your tyre slashed or whatever it is happening. So, first thing I would say is anyone that you're hiring, find them on social media.
Yeah.
Have a look at them on social media.
Yeah.
I'm not even like their company or their reviews, but just them personally. We do this when we hire people, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, we always have a little nosy, don't we?
You want to go...
Social media tells you quite a lot about people.
It does.
The things that they post.
Yeah.
It gives you an understanding of the way that the mind thinks.
Like, you see people that are online slagging off their work on social media. You're like, are you stupid?
Because...
Everybody can see that.
Yeah.
Like your boss.
Do you know what, though? Back in the day when I worked for M&S, they actually had some control. Look, if I'd come back from M&S and gone, crap day at work today. Even if I didn't name M&S, but said crap day at work today.
They'd know it was...
And you could get fired.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if you still can.
I don't know, but back in the day, they were like, if we see on your social media that you've posted anything about having a bad day at work, you'll be fired.
Fired.
And it was in the contract, you cannot.
But I've seen
post.
Like self-employed people, like builders, for example, although it's not what I'm actually thinking of, but I've seen people slag off their individual clients.
Yeah.
Love a cancellation, F them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, why are you posting that on your page?
Yeah, because you do.
Keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
And I was talking to someone about that this week. About they gave their daughter the advice to delete some of her social media because she's been looking for a job and handing a CV, and she's got quite a good CV and qualifications, but then she never gets much further. And the mum was like, because then they'll look you up and you're always partying. That's what you present on your social media.
Yeah.
And they're like, is it just a bit problematic? And if you're posting problematic things, people will think
that's going to come
to
work.
Forget it. We'll get someone who seems a bit more grounded
or hasn't posted for the last 6 months.
Yeah, because they're just. And I do think nowadays you have to be really careful what you post on social media.
Definitely.
And also, you can't take it back. So what about all the people that are now getting done for stuff they posted, like, which I think
10 years ago?
And now it's like, but you posted this 10 years ago. I feel a bit sorry for people because you think that was 10 years ago and times change. But
it's there.
Once
still.
You've put it out there, you
see, even people like Kevin Hart lost his job at the Oscars, didn't they? Because of a tweet he'd done 10 years ago.
Yeah, that now isn't acceptable to say.
So definitely got to be careful.
You do have to be very careful. But it's a great way to look into people, isn't it? And we always do. Whenever we first thing we do, look.
Yeah. Right, I imagine if you looked at Mr. S's social media, I imagine.
Tell you a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know what? That's actually something I haven't done. I haven't actually.
Have you not?
No.
Interesting.
I feel like you said that like he had, but like.
No, you haven't.
He was like, have you not?
Would have, but no.
I have, but I didn't want things to start popping up with my name on because of the court case.
Yes, and then so if he knows you've been looking.
After, but I need to let it be dealt with professionally.
Yeah. You need like a family member to do it for
family
you.
Member. Yeah.
All right, so that was the first tip. Next tip is, I always think, and it kind of comes back to what we did. When we had our entertainment agency, we were very bothered about our online reputation.
Yeah.
Right. So we wouldn't allow an entertainer to cause problems at an event or whatever, because then we get a bad review, and that's really serious to us.
Yeah.
And I think you don't build a good online reputation by accident.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, yeah, we just do a good job and get good reviews.
No, it's quite difficult,
actually.
You do
a little bit, but you have to actively build it and protect it and preserve it.
Yeah.
And I think that any builder that's got a good online reputation, yes, they're going to be busy. Yes, they might charge a little bit more.
Yeah.
But they're looking after the reputation, so the job finish should be bang on.
They'll want to do a good job for you.
Yeah.
They won't want to mess you around. They won't want to do anything that's going to cause you to give them a bad review. They're certainly not going to want to come and beat up
run you
over. Run
you
over.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you say, it might be a bit more time, but then plan. When you're buying property, it's hardly like you wake up one day and go, oh,
I need a refurb today.
I just bought that property today.
Yeah,
because it doesn't work like that. So you've got that time to think, right, I'm buying this property. Actually, it's going to go through in 3.5 months' time.
So let's start looking at people that we can employ.
Yes. Say, look, which we did review, didn't we? When we were renovating our house, we were like, our offer's accepted, but obviously we're talking now 4 months' time. Can you then free up your calendar after that to fit us in? And like, yeah, sure. And I think as long as you're not just like, okay, I've decided I want
can
to
you start tomorrow?
Today,
yeah.
Like, you should be okay.
What do you think of, like, check a trade?
So that's a good one to get reviews and, like, their reputation, because people do leave reviews. Yeah, good and bad.
Okay.
So check a trade, My Builder. There's a few different platforms out there that you can actually look into builders' path and see the work that they've done.
Is there
any
accountability? Like, well, for example, let's say you're on Check a Trade and you're not very good. Will they kick you off? Or they will.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They'll remove you.
So there is some accountability there.
Definitely.
So if you're getting a lot of work through Check
a
Trade,
My Builder won't want a builder on their platform that's constantly doing bad jobs.
Okay.
So you will be removed, and that My Builder will work with Check a Trade as well. So
okay.
It will go over all the different platforms.
That's good then.
That
so
is good.
Yeah, that is generally a good way to find out whether the builders
see,
are
I think
or
that
bad.
Okay.
Is much better than a personal recommendation. I know a lot of people like personal recommendations, but I've even had it done to me, right? So one of the guys who used to work with us, he recommended a builder called Dave. Of course he did. They're all builders are called Dave. Yeah. No, I mean,
if you want a builder in the family, just have a baby, call them Dave, and you've sorted.
You're done. Yeah, that's it. That's a good idea, actually.
Just call for Dave.
Yeah.
That's the problem solved. That's the top tip. Yeah. Top tip this week is next time you have a son, call it Dave. You know he's going to be a builder.
Or if you're buying a property and you want a baby, buy the property and then call it Dave. And
you
can get all the work
done. Yeah. Not David.
Not David, just Dave.
Dave. Yeah. It's got to be Dave.
Builders don't like David.
No, just good old Dave.
So anyway, he recommended this builder called Dave. And Dave had done a couple of jobs for him and done a good job. And he was singing his praises. Oh, this Dave is amazing. Right, so we had a project and we were like, well, let's use Dave right? Yeah. Because Dave is amazing, apparently. So Dave came along and Dave was like, oh, yeah, let's have a look. Right, if you, I need 30 grand for all the parts. I'll buy all that up front and then I'll take the rest. And we arranged a payment plan, pay him the 30 grand. And then Dave disappeared.
So that's a red flag straight away for me. Soon as you get builders that are coming and asking for money up front, they obviously haven't got the money saved to fund the projects. So straight away, I'd be thinking, well, hold on, if you've actually been recommended to do the last 10 years' work, but you haven't got the funds to buy the materials to fund the first half of the project, then that would be a red flag straight for me.
So even paying for materials up front, you think it's a red flag?
I've always paid for my own materials. I've always put it on the top of the job.
Yeah.
And then obviously at the end of the job, I put the prelim as full. I wouldn't feel comfortable in taking money off people before the job's
What
complete.
Would be the most you'd recommend people pay out before the job starts?
So let's say it's a 50 grand refurb. No, let's say for a normal house, let's say it's a 30 grand refurb, right? Back to brick type refurb, but a normal size house, 30 grand. How much should I expect to pay up front?
So
that
the way I've always worked it, with, say if I was doing an extension, so you'd stage it. So the first job would be to dig the footings.
Yeah.
So you dig the footings, you concrete it, you pull your money then for the materials that you've put into the ground. So then you've got enough funds then to come back to build it out the ground. So you'll do a part payment, you'll do a footings payment.
Yeah.
Then you'll get it up to roof.
Yeah.
So you'll do all the brickwork. Then you'll put a price in to cover your brickwork and labour. Then that'll release the funds to do the roof.
Okay,
so then once your roof complete and your inside's electrics, plumbing, roof, you'll do a final payment. But I would never actually pay anything up front. I'd always do it as a footings payment, above ground to roof level payment, and then I'd do a roof completement payment. So normally it's staged in three different payments. But I would, say if you was doing a 30 grand refurb and somebody asked you for 15 grand, I wouldn't even use them.
Okay, that is
what sort of money? What sort of money?
I would be expecting a full refurb for somebody to come and say, can I make a start? Skips, get the rubbish out, strip it back. I would say five to eight grand.
Would be about the max you'd be. So for a 30 grand refurb, so what that's about, what, like 8 grand would be about just under 25%?
Yeah, 20, yeah.
20%, be,
yeah,
something,
yeah,
like that.
Something like that. What I wouldn't be doing was paying
50% up front to get them on site.
Exactly. And then the problem is with paying 50% up front is you don't actually know what materials they're using. So if you've priced for mid-range and you've paid them 50 grand, you could end up with all lower range.
Yeah.
So if you sort of control the payments, and then you know what products are turning up on the job, you know you're getting the specification that you've asked for, rather than giving them a lump sum up front and thinking, oh, I'll just use everything cheap now because I've been paid.
Would you rather,
like, give them the money, let them go and buy the stuff, or would you rather buy the stuff yourself?
See, a lot of building contractors or small builders all make quite a bit of money on material.
Yeah.
That's another way of making money. I've never really been bothered with making money on materials. I'll just put my labour costs. So sometimes I will say to them, I need 30 bags of plaster. There's the invoice. Do you want to pay it?
And then
you can pay as you go.
Yeah.
So
that's what we've always done with you, isn't it?
Put the invoice in. I'll come to you with the invoice. You can phone the builders direct. I'm not making any money.
Yeah.
You know what product you're getting and you know when it's been delivered. Because a lot of builders will promise you it's coming tomorrow. It's coming tomorrow. And realistically, it hasn't even been ordered.
Yeah.
So with you controlling the payments, you know that Dave the plasterer has ordered 20 bags of plaster and it's coming on Monday.
But do you think if they don't do that, that's a red flag, or is that normal?
Every builder works different. So some you can get that's got a massive cash flow and they'll fund the job till the end.
And then
you could get somebody that's just started up or been going for 2 years and been took for 10 grand and they're trying to get their reputation back and they're struggling.
And
then they do need help buying the materials, but I'd never pay materials and labour.
Materials.
Yeah. It gives them an incentive to use the materials to get your labour.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've paid for both and something goes wrong, they've got no reason to sort of come back, have they? Because they've been paid.
And I've heard it, the stories in defence of builders, the other way, where they finish projects and then the people won't cash out.
That's constant as well.
So it is a hard line, like they deserve. Cause
it's a balancing act, isn't it? Where you want to make it fair so that everyone's got stuff to lose.
Yeah. Not just...
Because we've also had builders, like, we had a guy, Willingham, the plumber, and it was getting him to finish it off.
Oh, yeah.
Right, it was a nightmare. And he still was owed money.
Yeah.
Imagine if we'd paid him and he wasn't owed the money.
You'd have never saw him again.
No.
Never. Not an interest because he's had his money.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got to pay somebody else then.
And David thought, don't make me follow him. You can come and follow him yourself.
But it's a balancing act, isn't it? Where you're paying enough that they're not out of pocket, but not so much that they can't be bothered to come and finish the job because they've already been paid.
Yeah. So a materials list and then a part payment for your materials, definitely.
Yeah.
But a materials and labour?
No.
Yeah. And I do think recommendations, personal recommendations are okay, but you are much better off getting, if you have a personal recommendation, great, go and check all the other recommendations.
Definitely.
Go and do them. Because when we looked at a background check into this, Dave, that we're talking about, because he not only did it to us, he did it to loads of people at the same time.
Yeah.
He was doing good, and then all of a sudden everyone, including the guy that recommended him to us, he just took all the money, as much as he could up front.
And went abroad.
And just gone. And he'd done it, apparently he'd done it about 10 years ago before as well.
And if you'd have did the checks, you might have found this problem.
But I trusted the recommendation, which is a mistake.
Yeah.
So if you'd have gone on actually My Builder, they might not have ever put him on My Builder because of the problem that he did for 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, if you can't find that builder on Check or Trade or My Builder, there's a reason why he's not on there.
Yeah. So find their name, Google the name.
So would you say if they're not on either of those sites?
See, some people... I've never used Check a Trade or My Builder for the simple reason.
It's
always word of mouth. So if you've got no work and you need to promote yourself, it's different. But if you've got your own work for the next 5 years,
then they might not be on there, but they're also fully booked. Yeah.
And then you get old people that are stuck in the ways that won't do that at all because they want people to see the work.
Yeah, I feel like older people must be so vulnerable.
That's the hard thing, because older builders are the best builders and the builders that are teaching the kids their days, but they never got any qualifications back in the day.
No.
So now to actually put an old carpenter on a building site would never happen.
Mm.
But the kid that got passed 2 months ago...
He's on. Could build your roof.
Yeah.
Whereas actually the bloke that's been building roofs for the last 35 years and he's the best roofer in the country, but he hasn't got a qualification... can't build that roof.
Yeah.
So in some ways, you will get people on My Builder and Check a Trade, but people that have been out there for years,
just not interested.
Yeah.
And then my final thing that I made a note of was getting referrals, but actually phoning the referrals as well.
Definitely.
Some examples of people you've worked with recently, ring them up. What was your experience like? Do you mind if I come and see the site? Come and see
Did he turn up when he was said he'd turn up? Did he put the job off?
Did he stick to budget? Did he finish on time?
Yeah.
Because if someone rang us about the plumbers, for example, I'd go, they finished it in the end, but I wouldn't recommend them.
Yeah, no. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's been a nightmare to get them back.
Yeah.
They did finish it.
They did an okay job.
But I wouldn't recommend using them.
Or be very prepared, it will go over. Because there's a guy that does loads of renovations around here and everyone uses it. As I've started meeting people, I'm like, well, who's doing your house? They all use the same guy.
So that's probably a guy that you won't find on Check a Trade.
No.
Because there's no need for him to be on there.
Because
he's full. Yeah. He doesn't need.
Yeah. But he finishes on time because everything, the same things they all rave about. They all go, but he finished on time.
And finished on time, finishes
the
budget.
Yeah.
But annoys everyone because, in a good way though, he forces that. He's like, I need a decision now on this.
Yeah. He doesn't let people.
Like, and he does it his own way. So they all give the same feedback.
Yeah, they all give the same feedback.
Like, a builder that finishes on time and sticks to budget.
He's a win.
And he does a good job.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a win. He might be a bit awkward to work with. I'd take that.
All builders can be awkward to work with.
Yeah.
Because the client has always got the way they want it.
Yeah.
But whether it can be built that way is a different... You can always overcome it, but it's about money and budget.
It's like that glass door.
You can't have a 10 grand budget and want to take a wall out that's going to cost 10 grand and expect to have a kitchen fitted as well after.
You don't know people like that, do you?
No.
What about my wine cellar, the glass door? When that is what I want.
and he completed it, but when he came to filling it up with wine,
it doesn't stay full for very long.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. Shocking, true story. I'm really glad that, Dave, you managed to come and join us on the show. Really appreciate having you here. But hopefully as well, some really good lessons. If you are managing your own sites or you're doing BRR-type deals, in getting builders on site. So I hope you enjoy the show. I think it's been a really good one. I'm Russell Leeds.
And I'm Anna Leeds.
And we'll see you next week.